chapter 13 on tonight as we begin to continue to dive into the practical teachings that Paul is putting out here. As we looked at the first 11 chapters, we were able to see how Paul shifted, as I said before, from the doctrinal teachings, trying to get people to understand matters of theology and whatnot. And now he's moved into telling us how we should apply that to our lives. And last week, we discussed how we should relate to believers and unbelievers. So we looked at loving our enemies and praying for those who persecute us and all of those types of hard teachings. Sunday school. Were y'all in Sunday school? If you were in Sunday school this last Sunday, loving your enemies was the topic. And what the Sunday school is going through right now, if you don't go to Sunday school, I would encourage you to do so. I taught the young adults class on this Sunday and forgot that I turned that class over to Lynn several weeks, I guess seven or 8 weeks ago now. And I was really had been looking forward to teaching that last section, which is the hard sayings of Jesus. And that same thing, and to love your enemies. And like we said last week, Paul was picking that up and talking about praying for those who persecute you and doing good to all people, being devoted to one another, and all the rest of that. These are hard things for us to apply to our lives, but that's why Paul is teaching these things to us. And so, if you want to know how to practically apply being justified by faith, if you want to know how to apply all the rules and regulations that Paul had went through in the first 11 chapters, then you need to listen to what he's going to say in chapters 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16, because that's what he's doing. He says this is how you should live your life. And so, in chapter 13, he begins to teach us not how we relate to one another, as far as believers and unbelievers, but how we relate in verses 1 through 7 to governmental authorities. And if you look back at the time period, and it is always, folks, it is always important when you are studying the Bible to understand the historical context of what you were reading. All right, this was in the literary context, as far as that this is a letter written from the sender is the Apostle Paul. The recipients of this letter is the church at Rome. This is around A.D. 57, all right? So this is just a couple of decades after Christ had risen. So it was very tumultuous times in the world, and it was very tumultuous times in the Roman Empire. And I put in your notes here that the fate of a minority religious group was always dependent upon, in Rome, for instance, the current emperor at the time. If you study any history at all, if you study British history, you know, you would have a Protestant king or queen that would come up and they would just persecute the Catholics. Then, in several years, you'd have a Catholic king or queen take the throne. They'd persecute the Protestants out there. So you were in these countries, and the Roman Empire was the same way. Now, they had their own Roman religion, but they allowed Jews to have some freedom, and Christians they considered to be a sect of Judaism during that time, a part of the Jewish religion. And so they had some freedoms that were out there, and they had other religions that were able to operate in the Roman Empire. But that only depended, the freedom of religion, as far as they allowed it, only depended upon who the leader was. And so I put in 19 AD, close there to the time of Christ and his resurrection, the Emperor Tiberius expelled all the Jews from Rome. Then there was another expulsion somewhere in the ballpark of 49 to 50 AD by the Emperor Claudius. You can see that particular expulsion recorded in the Bible in Acts 18 in verse 2. It says there, he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. Paul went to see them. So that particular expulsion is recorded in the Bible. So you see the Romans, you know, having a very, very negative relationship with the Jewish people. And now if you understand this, Christianity, if they were doing this to the Jews, And Christians were considered to be a part of the Jewish religion. They were lower on the totem pole in Rome's eyes because the Christians were seen at this time in the Roman Empire as people that caused trouble. They caused trouble in Jerusalem. They supposedly had this guy called the King of the Jews, and it had some political and religious unrest in Jerusalem. The Roman authorities knew about that. Pontius Pilate just so happened to be the Roman governor in Jerusalem at the time. I can tell you that up the chain of command, he had alerted others about the unrest. Now, what he would have said was, I've got this taken care of, but they would have known there were some issues. And then across the known world at the time, in all types of cities that Paul was going into, in Corinth and Thessalonica and Ephesus and all the rest, these are Greek and Roman cities, that, and Rome was over these cities, and some were under Greek rule. So the Christians were looked at as these are problem children. So they were very much persecuted during this time as well. So the church in Rome would have been uniquely attuned to issues between church and state, okay? They would have been persecuted by the government. They would not have liked the government. And so here Paul is fixing to begin in verses 1 through 7 to talk to them about some things that really would have rocked their world and been some hard teachings for them to be able to swallow. So now I say in this last bullet point, this made for a very rocky situation for the Christians and the government of the day. And I can imagine that many people in here feel that even living in the greatest country on the face of the planet right now, that we have a rocky relationship with our government as Christians today. We have no utter idea what a true rocky relationship with a government is until you are afraid at every moment that you even have a Bible in your hand of somebody hauling you off to be hung or to be put in the Colosseum and mauled by lions and all the rest of that kind of stuff that is out there. We are a blessed people. But in Romans 13, 1 through 7, nonetheless, Paul says, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Now, and you stop right there, and he puts this under, hey, Christy, he puts this in no uncertain terms, right? He says that, how many people, look back at the full part of that verse there for me, Joe. How many people?
Everyone.
This is everybody, all right? Everyone. And then he says, everyone should. Words matter, okay? He is not being subjective in this. He is issuing a command. And you need to understand that. Whether you like it or not, we need to understand this is a command in the Bible written to people who had worse situations than you and I do. So take any bias that you may have when you're reading these seven verses and lay it aside, and I want you to hear it like the Roman audience in 57 AD would have been hearing this after having been expelled from Rome, the Jews and whatnot, twice that we've already discussed, and more times than that. But it says, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities. What he meant in that was you must submit yourself to the Roman emperor. That's how they heard it. And they're going, he's got to be crazy. And then he follows it. For there is no authority except that which God has established. pretty hard words for even those of us today when it comes to certain governments that we may be under. But Paul is basically commanding believers to submit, and that means that you need to cooperate with the government at the time. You're not going to have a tiny segment of a minority religion in an empire overthrow the government, okay? You're not going to have the Christians that are part of the Jewish religion that are not even the majority somehow topple the Roman Empire. So Paul says you need to submit to them and you need to cooperate with them so that you may be able to do some good there. We should be able as Christian people to live as best we can in harmony with those people around us. That way you can affect change at some point. You have to do this today in your workplace. I can guarantee you today, if any of you have ever worked a day in your life outside of working for yourself, and you work for the man, as it were, and you've worked for the government, you work for a corporation, then you have submitted yourself to certain rules and regulations that you as an individual did not like. Now, probably not things that would have been in conflict for the most part for your religious standpoint, but you surrendered yourself to the authority of many rules and regulations in that job that you personally disagreed with. But yet, you had to do it so that you could. So what I say, sometimes you had to go along to what? Get along. And that was the same thing that Paul was saying to them. There are times that you have to go along with certain things in order to get along. Because if you rebel against everything that you may disagree with at some point, you're going to get your head chopped off. You're going to cease to live. I mean, the Romans were not going to put up with that kind of stuff. They would have just killed them all. So there are some things that you need to, and he's saying here in very strong words, that you're to submit to them. And why is that? Because God has established these governments that are here. And a lot of people think, well, unless you have political backing, then the church cannot thrive. What a lie. What an absolute lie. One of the worst things that has happened to the church, and I have studied church history, one of the worst things that happened to the church was that the Roman Empire got involved. And you had the Emperor Constantine make Christianity the religion of the Roman Empire, and people championed that. But see, used to, when you had a council meeting of all the bishops and church leaders, a bishop sat as the head of the council. Well, you know what happened when Constantine began to sanction and call the councils? Guess who sat as the head of that meeting? The emperor. Now, I want to ask you a question real quick. If you wanted to call a meeting of all of the Protestant Christians, let's just use the Southern Baptist Convention, for instance, and any president sat as the leader of the Southern Baptist Convention, a lot of people's eyes would kind of go up and go, what are they doing? Let's say the conference of the Methodist Church, they had a big conference and all the bishops and stuff, and they said, no, Trump, come sit and be the head of this, not the bishop. The Trump sits there in the papal throne or in the Presbyterian church. You would never, it would be totally ridiculous to you and I that a political person sat as the head of any type of religious gathering of minds, right? But yet Constantine did that, and Constantine directed, and thus the bishops did what Constantine said do. Now, it didn't work out all bad, but it gave the state a lot of power over the church in Rome at the time. In my view, one of the worst things that had taken place. Now, you take a place like China, who is totally against Christianity and faith, and you've seen and you heard, I should say, from our Gideon speaker on Sunday, millions of Bibles are getting into the Chinese cities and homes and all the rest of that. Really, the church thrives when it's oppressed. The church thrives when it doesn't have freedoms that are being given to it. The church gets all lax and loses its zeal when we're on the mountaintop, when everything's doing good, when you think everything's being supportive, of you. So, lest we, not get into some kind of crazy thought process, we need to understand that really and truly the church spread simply because the Christians were being oppressed by the Jews, and that's how they spread throughout the known world at that time. And you have much more faithful people right now meeting in huts all over the world in places like Africa and Latin America than you do sitting in churches of air-conditioned American places. I can tell you, they have much more zeal. They don't sit there and make a whole day about some corporate business. They're out there trying just to get their families a copy of a Bible so that they can maybe tell them about the story that a missionary told them and spread that all around their villages and things of that nature. And Americans, as I told you on Sunday, I have more than 20 Bibles that are sitting around in closets and things of that nature that are collecting dust. So when we're oppressed, when our freedoms are kind of taken away a little bit, and the state is against us, it seems that the church thrives better under those circumstances. But Paul, and that's why Paul is saying, God is the one that has established the government, and you need to get what he's saying in verses 1 and 2 here. He goes into verse 2, and he says, consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Yes. You're going to get ahead of yourself here.
I'm just saying, reading this first part, the first two, this is true unless it goes against.
You're getting ahead of yourself. Don't say, we're not reading what it doesn't say. We're just reading what it does say right this second. God has established, the point you got to get to, God uses government. He has set up the kings. He's done it all the time. He allows any person to become president or king or queen or prime minister or whatever the case is out there. He allows people to be your manager at your job. He allows me to be the pastor. He allows you to be the head of your family. God is in control of every single thing that happens on the planet. I'm not saying that he is the one that has absolutely got to be moving all the pieces around. I'm saying at the end of the day, he is the architect of everything, the creator, and he is the one that has set the overall plan from beginning to end out there. And so it was not God's official will that Israel should have ever had a king. He was a king. But the people wanted that, went and gave it to him. He wanted the people just to live off of the manna that they had, but they asked for quail. He sent them a little quail in the wilderness that is out there. There's all different types of things that God does, and human governments he uses. He institutes them, and he's saying here that if you rebel against that authority, you are rebelling against something that God has instituted, and if you do so, will bring judgment on themselves. The Bible never teaches anarchy and rebellion against any government at any time. It never preaches that you should be out there. It doesn't say that you should be breaking laws. It tells us very clearly we should be following laws. All right. Now, I know in many people's head they're going, and this is, Carolyn, just read down a couple of bullet points there. The third bullet point down in verse 2, I think, or fourth, depending on how you're counting. There are times when we should disobey government, and that is when it is attempting to force us to break God's law. Okay? Examples of that being Daniel in Daniel 1, 8 through 21. Did he stop praying? I preached on that too long ago when they told him, hey, you can't pray but anybody but Darius. And he was caught praying. He got thrown in the lion's den. He was not going to follow that particular law. But Daniel followed Babylonian and Persian law, and Medo-Persian law when he was in those places. That particular one he could not follow. There was a time when the king said that they needed to eat the meat from the table. And rather than Daniel just disobeying that, he went to the guard and said, listen, can we not just eat the lettuce and all the rest of that stuff and all and see, and you come and see how we're doing well. So he had engagement with them rather than just saying, I'm not going to eat that meat because it's been sacrificed or it's unpure or whatever that was like that. He didn't just stop. So God never said we should rebel, but in the times of it's breaking God's law, you always have to obey God rather than the law. But you can't say, well, God didn't say that speed limit was 35 or 45 out here. If the speed limit says 45, then what the point of this is, that has nothing to do with breaking God's law, and you need to be following that. Okay? Absolutely. So you have examples here, Daniel and then his friend Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They did not bow to the fiery furnace. Jesus and Luke did not worry about when it come to picking wheat and all that on the Sabbath, his disciples, and healing people on the Sabbath, excuse me, and then his disciples picking wheat on the Sabbath. They did rebel against laws, both from government and from religious standpoints, when it had nothing to do, when it was trying to break a law of God, or something that should have been happening. But barring those things, when the government says you should do something and it is not against God's law, you should follow it. So the Bible, if you read, you got to read the whole thing. You could read from Paul, he's saying, just follow the government anywhere. Well, obviously, you know that that would be too far. That's not what he's saying. But 99% of the time, you should be following the laws of the government, okay? That's what he's saying in verse 2. Because the government is sanctioned by God, it is here and it is here for a purpose. Now, what is that purpose? In verses 3 and 4, it says, for rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong, do you want to be free from the fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. All right? So what is the point of that verse right there? Go back for me, Joe. In verse 3. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right. They shouldn't have any kind of problems. They shouldn't have any fear for people who are doing right. But they do hold terror for those who do wrong. So, question. You want to get out from under the fear of those rulers? Keep yourself right. Keep straight. I was in court this morning fighting a hands-free law ticket that I got. And I got that thing wiped away by showing them a receipt. But while I was sitting there today, there were several young people in there, a little bit younger than me, thank the Lord. But they had told us expressly, turn your phone off. When a sheriff tells me to turn my phone off, I don't even question it. I said, yes, sir, turn it off right here. Yes, I have bank business and all the rest of that. I did what he said. Now, some of my people my age and younger, and maybe some a little bit older than that, they wanted to rebel against such. So the officer come in and said, hey, turn it off. What do you mean, man? I got kids. I got this. Fool, you are in here to get out of a ticket, and you are arguing with him. He said, hey, come here. You know, and he kept going in. He come back just mouthing off, and the lady beside me said, he's going to get locked up. I said, well, we need some entertainment because I've been here for an hour and a half, in there. And so, you know, you have people that they just don't respect authority. And I'm telling you, especially if you were at me and you're an officer, I don't care, military, whatever, and you are pointing a gun at me, I'm on the ground. I am not about to be arguing. That is not the time to be arguing with you. If you got one on your hip, that's not the time to be arguing. If you just got a badge, I'm not going to argue with you. I already did that once, and the state patrol said, get out of the car, and there we go, okay? It scared me to death. In that place, I'm just sitting there thinking, like, come on, people. What in the world? Just do what they said. Now, did I like it sitting there? No, I would much rather have been reading something for the 2 hours that I was there. I should have just paid the $50 ticket and didn't even waste my time with it. But I had a point on my license, and I didn't like that. So, anyway, and I may get caught doing that again at some point. I don't know, because they're crazy about that law, by the way. But we'll talk about it in a different time. But you must obey that law. When that cop pulled me over, I said, well, I was not texting driving. He said, yes, but you had it at the red light in your hand. I had text one of my employees, tell him, hey, get the meeting started because I'm in traffic. And the traffic was because there was a sting operation on Bass Road, you know, about what I had got caught for. And I thought, Did I send the text message on there? Yes, I did. But, you can't be rolling. Well, so, okay, thank you. Give me the ticket. Where do I sign? And I went on about my business. I was not going to argue with him. I wasn't going to fuss. I was certainly not going to say inappropriate language, to them or any of that stuff. Just admit it and move on if you have broken the law and deal with the consequences that are there. Yes, I got scared when I seen those lights behind me. You know why? Because I just figured I had done something wrong, but I knew I hadn't even had enough time to speed. Okay, so I didn't know what in the world was happening, but I knew with those blue lights, something is not right in Kansas. There we go, and that's the first ticket I've got in a decade. But do you want to be free from fear of those in authority? Typically speaking, I don't have a fear when I hear a siren because I know I have done nothing wrong, all right? And that's what this is saying. If you have done something wrong, then you have something to fear. But if you have not, you don't have anything to fear, all right? So going into verse 4, let's jump to that. It says, "For he is God's servant to do good. But if you do wrong, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer." All right. The person, the ruler that is there, it says in the first part of verse 4 here, very strong five words here. "For he is God's servant." Okay, or she, you want to put that up there. These are people that are God's servants. Pharaoh, pretty wicked fellow with Moses, he was a servant of God. Romans chapter 9 told us that, okay? Many wicked kings and all the rest of it, you don't have to be a good, upstanding politician because there are none, all right? So, with that being said, they're all servants. This does not necessarily mean that they are believers in God. This means that God is going to be using them, all right? That they are in his service in some type of way. And that the purpose, though, for a government and for is to do good. And that good is to provide checks and balances for people, keep people in line, if you will, to have protection over them, and to bring overall blessings to them. That's what a king in their context and an emperor was supposed to do, was to keep peace and to protect the people under the purview that he had, all right? That was the main thing. But if somebody did wrong, and there was also retribution that was supposed to happen, and Paul said very clearly, "For he does not bear the sword for no reason, for nothing." There is punishment that governments levy upon us, whether that be fines or whether that be some type of jail sentence, or whatever. All of that is sanctioned by God. It is consequences for our actions that we're supposed to have. It is things that teach us about responsibility as we that there are consequences to our actions while we're living on this earth. So, he is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Don't you expect that our government enforces laws? Don't you expect that? Who should enforce the laws? The people or the government? Hopefully, our elected people, the government is part of our police force and our military and all the rest of that. It has always been the case that you shouldn't just have vigilantes going out and shooting people like the Wild Wild West, that it should be the law people that are doing that, and that's the government. And they are here for that purpose. But if you're not a wrongdoer, then typically speaking, you ought not to have any fear of the government. But in verse 5, it says, "Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience." All right? Because you shouldn't just say, "Well, I'm fearful that they're going to do something wrong to me. That's why I should submit to them." You should do it because it's the right thing to do. It shouldn't be, "Well, I'm always afraid," and that's the same thing to God. It shouldn't be that I'm doing what's right in God's eyes because I'm scared of going to hell. I should do it because it's the right thing to do and that he said to do that. In verse 6, it goes into a wonderful subject that we all enjoy. It says, "This is also why you pay taxes." I should have made sure we did this about 3 or 4 weeks ago, around about April the 15th. But this is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. What's that verse say? Somebody tell me what that means. I can't hear you. What did you say? Okay, that's one interpretation. Very, very, very close there. If I was in a Methodist church, I was just baptized again. Huh?
So you can pay their salaries.
So you can pay their salaries. Just as pure, as simple as that. That's why you pay taxes. So you have somebody who's devoting their time to governing. Bible's pretty clear about why you should pay taxes. But there again, when those people are in power, what are they supposed to do? Back up two verses for me, Joe, if you can. For he is God's servant, what? To do good. All right. So you ought to be paying taxes to a government that has a leader that is there to do good, right? In the perfect world is what Paul is talking about here, that you are paying those taxes for that government who is keeping law and order happening, and they're protecting you from other military powers and things that are out there, leading so that you can thrive and you can do good within the purview of that particular leader. So you pay taxes. For the authorities are God's servants. And again, that's why I connected you back to verse 4. They're God's servants, and they give their full time for governing. It used to be a whole lot more, and this is not just in the United States. This is across the world, European Union, the United Kingdom government, everywhere else. It used to be that when you went into government, that was a true service and public service that you were doing for the people. You didn't get a ton of money to be able to do that, but you had to have some money to be able to help you out while you were out there. Now it is a career path. Now you go to college, you get a degree in political science, and you instantly go and make about 150 grand a year doing that particular job, and you make about $3 billion when you finally quit the job and get out of there and write some books and all the rest of that and get speaking fees at $600 a clip. Okay? But that's not where the tax monies go to, right? But still, $150,000, you know, to be the Speaker of the House or whatever, or much more than that, is a whole lot of money. But the taxes are there to have the government working. Obviously, government wouldn't work without having some money to support it. And we should, as Christian people, be clear that it is our duty in any government, anywhere, for us to pay taxes, okay? Jesus answered this question. They said, "We are to give to Caesar." He said what? "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and under God what is God's." Okay? He was clear about that. Verse 7. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. So Paul here is kind of taking all of what he has just said and reinforcing that in relation to what he was saying about taxes and all the rest of it. But he's putting that out there about everything, and he's setting us up for what he's going to be talking about in the next set of verses when we go down to look at. And I'm sorry, I messed up where I was at here. And when we start looking at verses 8 and going to the end and how we deal with debt, all right? So we're supposed to be doing right. And here's the point that Paul is making out here. We are supposed to be folks that are doing what is right, that is standing up for the things that are good and noble. We're not supposed to be rebelling and finding reasons to go out and rebel and cause problems that are out there. Again, Jesus came. He could have overthrown the Roman government, but he didn't do so because it wasn't his time. And he went along so he could get along when he was here. When they said do something, well, he did it within reason. He didn't do things that went against God's will. So that's exactly the standard that you and I are supposed to have. So when you see Christians that are standing up and saying, for instance, I am going to work, but I am not going to pay income taxes, that is a sin. Plain and simple. I mean, you may not like it. And you can't say, well, I don't like the government isn't putting my money where it's supposed to be. We don't have that luxury. That is not what the Bible tells us to do. No, you don't have to fund certain things that you don't like. But folks, you work for corporations that you got that paycheck from that may have given money to something that you don't like, but you still take that paycheck and put it in your bank account. I work for Bank of America. They had some really big views that I didn't like. But every 2 weeks, I let that paycheck go in my account and I spend it just the same. So you can't sit here and say, I'm not going to give a dollar in taxes to the government because they may support in some part of the trillions of dollars worth of budget that we have, something that you say is unbiblical. Of course they are. Of course they are. All right? But so again, they're in taxes and supporting, you know, the government. It's the same thing in the church. It's the same thing in the church. When you give money here, you don't have control over every, and neither do I, by the way, have control over every single dollar that goes out of that plate. And I have heard Christians say before, and I'm going to say something about this in a second, I ain't giving that no more because, you know, they didn't give to such and such. You know what? Didn't want your money in the first place. Because when I give my money, and guess what? Me and my wife do. I don't give it and then say I'm going to dictate to where all of my money goes. I give it, and there's things in the board, like, you know, buying a lawnmower, that they voted without even asking me to vote with them. You know, I didn't get mad. You know, I'm just joking. I really didn't care about that, you know, in there. But I am the leader of the church, and I don't dictate every dollar. I mean, you know, 85 cent out of the dollar, but you know, I can't dictate everything that comes out of there. But I don't think about it like, I don't think about my personal giving like that, that I'd give that same amount whether I had any control over what was given or not. Because you know why? I don't give because of what may be the retribution. I give out of conscience, because that's what you're supposed to do. And so when we look at ourselves, when we stand before God, you can't say, God, I disobeyed your word because I didn't like what this person said or did over there. He doesn't care. You can't say, I hate that person because they wronged me. He said that if you have hatred for your brother in your heart, that you might as well committed murder. We are to live differently. Man, I wish Bradley I had that shirt up here so I could show. Bradley made me a shirt. I love it. It says, dare to be different right up here. And on the back says, dare to be different. That's what we're supposed to be. People should be able to recognize us. They go, what? Those people are just cheerful and they're going along. Because let me tell you, when it gets bad, which, folks, it's going to get worse in our country. When it gets bad, I can promise you God's going to be working even more than he was before, because again, in persecution, the church thrives. The church doesn't thrive when we're being given everything. That's what Satan wants us to feel like. But you can see when there is some type of persecution that is out there, things go well. I put two verses of scripture in here for you from Matthew. Matthew 23:12 and verse 20, chapter 20, verse 16. But in 23:12 it says, for whosoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. I want you to couple that with chapter 20 and verse 16 here. And it says, so the last, and the first will be last. It's a topsy-turvy world when you're a Christian. When I see people here, and I'm many here at UCC, and I don't mean that it's always maybe somebody that is a member of our church or not. I'm not making any judgment on that. But we have a function, maybe food there. And you're knocking people down to get to be the front of the line. And I know that somebody may have thought of one or two people that you've seen over the years, but there's plenty of people that do that. Makes me sick. Because that right there shows me you just have no clue. You have no clue. People ask me all the time why I don't let people, and they used to try to do this all the time, usher me to the front of the line in front of all those people and sit me down at a table up there. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Number one, that really makes me look fat. I'm joking about that. But number two, I'm not going to be the one that takes a piece of chicken and eats it whenever somebody else here didn't get one. I'm not going to do that. I don't take the last thing that is out there. I was raised by my grandparents. They taught you to do that. Okay? I'm not one of these people that would ever eat and then give my kids what is left over. I'm not going to do that. And I've been blessed. Look, I ain't missed a meal being this way. So, I mean, you can be good and more and flat sinful the way I am right now. So the thing is, folks, that we have to understand when we're always out here trying to puff ourselves up and exalt ourselves and all the rest of that, that is the opposite of what God said we're supposed to be doing. If you will, go back to chapter 23, Joe, for me, and look at that. I want you to understand, in order to apply what Paul has just been saying about the government, you will have to humble yourself. You will have to humble when you want to love your enemies, you have to humble yourself. And that's hard. Humility is not something that comes from us naturally. You have to not default to your old ways, but you have to humble yourself. And if you'll do that, you may feel like you got a raw deal in this life. But if we'll humble ourselves in this life, that exaltation comes in heaven. I'm not worried about this life, okay? I'm worried about the next. I'm worried about standing before God and standing there and doing right. And let me give you an example about something like this and give Glenn some kudos. I know that man is saved and has the Holy Spirit because my wife took Ansley out on Friday to change the diaper at the rehearsal dinner. And there were some pins that we had marking our meal. And so we had to put on the paper about what we wanted to eat. And Ansley was playing with those. And when we all left to go outside, I noticed that Ansley had those two pins in her hand. And I said something about, "Look at that, we're going to steal them pins." And Glenn says he said something. I don't really recall, you know, him saying, "Oh, don't worry about it," you know, but he said that. But, you know, and I even thought and left there and go, "Oh, we really did. That kind of looked bad in front of all these Christian people out here that I just walked away and didn't take those pins back in." So I was looking at myself, Glenn, but we go to the wedding Saturday afternoon, and Glenn comes up to me. He said, "I don't know why I didn't say something to you about it yesterday." He said, "But I was gonna," and he was convicted himself. But I went back there to the van and got those pins, and we tried to return them two big pins that maybe cost about 20 cents each. But the thing about it is, wasn't it wrong? It was wrong, especially when we realized the fact that those pins were not ours. And as trivial as that looks, even to us, and we laugh about it, and I don't know what happened with the pens or whatever. I gave them to you, so if you didn't give them to him, that's on you, brother. Okay. But when we look at it, we really, and I've thought about that thing all week, really, about just how many times we may think, and when you look at this scripture where it goes, how many times you thought on your taxes, for instance, "Oh, we'll just skim a little bit here or there," and that will not be something that goes well to us. We are supposed to stand without blemish before God. And when we know that we're wrong, when you lie to get out of a ticket and all the rest of that stuff, no, you didn't have to pay the fine for that ticket, but then we lied, you know. So we have to be careful, because Satan only needs about an inch to not get in and unsave us, but to really wreak havoc in our life. So Paul is talking about these verses for us to really look at our life and really apply this stuff to ourselves. And when we can stand before God and say, you know, we did our absolute best in every way. And the big things, you and I in here, we're really not going to, for the most, I'll speak about myself for a minute. I'm probably not going to do the crazy bad stuff tomorrow. But if I let myself be chipped away a little and a little and a little and do a little bad here, a little bad here, it all spirals and leads to that being overtaken by evil, as we looked at on last week on there. And so that's the way when it comes to the government. If God had written the Bible to say, "Hey, rebel just a little bit of the time," then we would be anarchy all the time. There should be rare instances, and there's times right now, like Christy, and I'm ending with this, if they come in and tell me that I've got to perform gay marriages. I'm not going to do that. Okay? Not that I hate homosexual people. I do not. But I'm not going to do that. Okay? And come what may, whatever happens at that. But if they tell me I cannot pray, and I was in a senior home, I'm going to be like Daniel, 3 times a day. Get out of there. Get out of there. I'm going to pray. I'm just telling you, right, because there is a spirit of rebellion that I have in me, and that would be an awesome time to be able to do that. But do not ever cede power to the government that is due to God. Okay? Don't ever do that. He's never going to smile upon you by doing that. But when it is not something that's breaking God's law, be sure that we are abiding by that. And next week we're going to get into some craziness for me as a banker when it comes to debts and all the rest of that, okay? Let's pray. Father God, we do praise you and we thank you. And Lord, I